My friend Justin made himself available, and I hope that that you guys will have the opportunity to meet people like Justin in your travels in AA, and we'll have an opportunity to get to know him. And what a great chance to let you get to know him a little bit better tonight. Here's my friend Justin.
Here you go.
Yeah.
I'm Justin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Justin.
I'm here.
All right.
Where should I begin? It's the first month, and so, you know, normally month one, I don't know if you guys read out of the daily reflection, but normally the months kind of follow the steps, right? So, that first step. You know, but when I first came into the rooms, I was 21 years old, and I went here because my family said that I had a drinking problem, and I just totaled my car, left the party, I sideswiped my friend's new Volvo, then I drove, ran over a stop sign, slammed into a tree, managed to get my car away from the tree, turned it on, drove 3 more miles to a party, showed up in front of the party, and the car was just pouring out all these different liquids, and my girl was meeting there, was like, what happened to your car? I'm like, what do you mean what happened to my car? And she's like, look at your car. I'm like, oh shit, I guess I crashed it. I didn't piece all this together the next day. Long story short, my family brought me here. My grandma took me. She has over 20 years of sobriety, and I sat through that meeting, and then I told everyone, you know, who I was and how old I was and that I'm here and I might have a drinking problem, and they really didn't make a big deal of it. They didn't give me any credit for being 21 and in an AA meeting, and I got really resentful, and I just was like, screw these guys, you know, like, they should make a bigger deal about this. So I decided that AA wasn't for me. And, you know, I always had kind of an itch. I always liked to just, when I was in, like in first or second grade, I would drive right around on my bicycle, and I'd find cigarette butts that people had smoked on the side of the, road, and I'd light them, and I'd smoke cigarettes, and I just liked the way it felt. I liked doing things in secret that I knew I shouldn't be doing, but there was just something about the satisfaction and that ease and comfort that it felt. So when I discovered alcohol, I was 13 years old, and I, you know, ended up drinking through high school, and really I wasn't that great of a student. I never really cared to be a good student. I never cared to apply myself in school. And so I really didn't know if I was going to be a good student or not, because I just didn't care. But there was just over and over again, what I found was that I was either getting into some sort of trouble with a girl, or I was getting into some sort of trouble with alcohol. And in both instances, what would happen is it was brought on after everything, you know, ended. I either felt shame, or I felt humiliation, or guilt. And these emotions just kind of ruled my life. I developed this pattern of self-hatred. I think it stemmed from my childhood and just doing things in secret, and you know, there's some sexual things there that I won't get into, but they're there, and there was things that happened that basically caused me to start developing this mantra of just, you know, you're just a piece of shit, basically. And by the time I got into high school, it was a habitual saying that I just meditated on. Meditation is a powerful thing. And so I was either dating a girl, or I was dating some guy's girl. And by the time I got to my senior year, I just had this terrible reputation, and I just found myself going further and further into drinking and just needing to hide and do things behind closed doors. And then it just kind of progressed from there. All of my friends left and went to college. I never really even thought about college. I was just kind of left there alone. And like I said, by the time I was 21, my parents finally said, you know, you're an alcoholic, you need some help. And my grandma brought me, and I just decided it wasn't for me. So I did start going back to school. I eventually went up to Fresno State. And once again, I continued the same behavior there. I would drink in my apartment or my house by myself, with doors locked, and, you know, smoke a lot of weed, and just kind of, I was just kind of a recluse. And then I would go to the class, and then I had some friends that I knew from high school who were there, and so then we started going to bars, and my life was just kind of consisted of that, of drinking in private when no one else knew I was drinking, and going to class. And so by the time I was, 24, I was graduating from Fresno State and going off to rehab. So, which is a great graduation present. So I'm off at this rehab in Los Angeles, and it was this really weird, it was in West Hollywood, and it was this house, and I lived in, there was a pool house behind it. It was like this $1 million house, but they charged me nothing to go there. It was like $900 a month. And I don't know if everyone was charged that, but I basically was like, hey, I don't have any money, and like, I know I have a problem, like something's wrong here, so I think I just need to cool off. I chose to go there. Obviously my family was very encouraging of it, but I knew something was wrong, and I was just getting, this thing with alcohol was just getting away from me. And I felt like I was losing control over it, and it started to worry me because it felt like I had my whole life ahead of me, and I just didn't know how to control it, and depression was very thick. Something that was coupled with it, where I'm just so depressed that I just want to sleep all day, and I have just no motivation, and it shouldn't be this way. And so something's wrong here. I'm either drinking or sleeping or drinking some more. and like I said, it's all behind closed doors where no one really can figure you out. And when you go out with your buddies, it's like, hey, you know, we're going out, but this isn't something you do all the time. So then, you know, they didn't really know it was a problem. So I'm there, I'm at this rehab, and I'm just angry all the time. I'm sober, I don't work any steps. It's a rehab, but it's also like a halfway house. It's all like a combination of things. And it was ran by this guy, Mayor, and he just decided what goes and what doesn't. So one guy's detoxing on a bed without any medical supervision, and there's another guy there who's been there for like a year who's just like trying to find a job still, and like just a bunch of different people. It was a very interesting environment. So I stayed sober there for about 8 or 9 months, and I was just completely miserable. And finally I just snapped this, and I got a job at a restaurant, and this dude took my cheeseburger to another person's table, and I just snapped, and I grabbed him, and I threw him into this glass freezer, and I got in a fight with this guy on the floor of this restaurant, and they fired me. About 2 weeks before that happened, the parking attendant at the parking garage that worked, parked at, he used to cut me a deal. He charged me $8 for parking instead of $11. And then one day I go out there, like 2 weeks before I got fired, and it's like, hey, sorry, I have to charge you $11 now. And I just start like cussing at the guy, and we start cussing at each other. And then I pull out a knife, and I'm like running at this guy with a knife, and he shuts his little, you know, cubby that he was in. And he's like, there's cameras there, and there. And he starts calling the police. So I run through the gate and take off. And it was just, I didn't really see that was irrational behavior by any means. I didn't think it was irrational. It was just where I was at. I was just in this miserable spot where I'm like 8 months sober. Nothing's changing in my life. I don't understand why. And I don't, and then I really thought like, okay, maybe maybe it wasn't drinking that's the problem, because obviously I'm not drinking and nothing's getting better. So after I got fired, I went out. I moved back to Visalia and I just started drinking again. And I one last ditch effort with sobriety, which is after like a 6 month bender, I basically locked myself in my room at my parents' house. I just read all the time. I didn't have a job. I had nothing. I just read. I just read thousands of pages of books, and I just thought maybe if I fill my head with enough knowledge, I will somehow get this. And nothing changed. So I started drinking again. And then when I was 28, I started dabbling in this white powdery non-habit forming substance called cocaine. And found that made me feel good, which was nice because I hadn't felt good in a long time. So started doing that casually, drinking, and then it just kind of took this turn where I just stayed drunk around the clock for, I don't know, like 9, 10, 11 months. I have no clue. I don't really have any. I have very few memories of that entire time of my life. It's all just kind of a blur. I can't tell you one day from the next. It was just constant chaos and turmoil. I had a girlfriend that I just put through hell. I had multiple side girlfriends that I was seeing from time to time because one girlfriend, I needed her income to help me sustain my habits, as well as my own income. I would be drinking and doing drugs in the bathroom every 30 minutes at the job that I had, and I was able to keep the job somehow, I don't know. And then, you know, found some other girls who were also willing to contribute to my lifestyle, and that's just the way I lived. And it just kind of all came to a halt. There was a period there, about 3 months before I got sober, I was just having this moment of clarity where I had this, like, this feeling, like, you're gonna take this to the bitter end, and the bitter end is gonna come a lot sooner than you think. Every time I used the restroom, there was, blood coming out of my body from just the stress that I was putting on my body, and I really thought it was something else. I was convinced I had a brain tumor. And I would go to the doctor, and I'd get checked for all these different things, and I've seen a therapist, and he was telling me I'm an alcoholic. Then finally one night, I came home after all I'd been there. It was like 6:30 in the morning, and I just kind of broke down crying on the couch, and I just said, I just cried out. I just said, I can't do this anymore. I need some fucking help. And then nothing changed. And my family said I can't be in their lives anymore unless I get some help. And so, I just kind of accepted that that's how it was going to be. I didn't, believe that AA was going to work for me. I'd been to AA twice and nothing happened. And then my uncle, 2 days before Christmas, knocked on my door, and he said, "Get your ass in the van. We're going to a meeting." And I said, "No, I'm good. There's family here. You know, my family all got together and they agreed to let me join them for Christmas, which I thought was a really nice gift." So 2 days before Christmas, I'm hanging out with family. I had just gotten this big old fight with my mom and threatening her and all this stuff. It's really uncomfortable. And then my uncle was like, "You know, get your ass in the van. We're going to meet." I'm like, "No, I'm okay." And he's like, "No, that wasn't a question. Get your ass in the van." I'm like, "All right, fine, whatever, dude." So his van is this like old 1980s like just creepy guy van that you don't allow in your school. It's like, there's like curtains on the windows, and there's like 6 inches of trash on the ground, and it reeked of cigarettes. The windows didn't work, so he smoked cigarettes like the chain smoker. He was only 6 months sober. And so we get into this van, we're hotboxing with cigarettes, and like we're driving on the freeway to Fresno because there's no other meetings. And he's like, yeah, you're lucky there's a meeting in Fresno right now. If not, we'd be driving to L.A. I want you to know that I am willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. And every couple of minutes, the lights on the van would shut off. So he'd have to lean over and jiggle some wires, then they turn back on. And then a couple minutes pass by, and then it's pitch black again on the freeway and jiggle the wires. And we're just smoking cigarettes like crazy. And but the best part was is I realized in that van that for the first time in longer than I can tell you, I felt safe. And there was something about him telling me just how bad he screwed up his life that I really enjoyed. Because he wasn't that guy in that moment. He seemed to have some freedom that I didn't have and I wanted it. And so we went to a meeting, and then the next meeting I went to was actually, David was there. Thank you, David. They decided to hold a meeting, and they weren't sure if they were going to because of the holidays, Christmas. And Christmas Day, and I show up there, and there's five of us in that room. Those are two. And thank God that these rooms are open every day of the year, because that was my second meeting. And then I just, my uncle stayed around for another 8 days, and he just kind of helped me get sober, introduced me to Bill, who was instrumental in that beginning part of my sobriety as well, just helping me kind of navigate this life that I didn't understand and I was kind of afraid of. And yeah, it was something I was just really unsure of at the beginning. There was a meeting. It was like I was 1 week sober and I'm sitting in this meeting and they're like, this is a newcomer I want to share. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to share. I'm like, I gotta be honest with you guys, I'm overwhelmed. Like, you guys are talking about how great your lives are with 10 years of sobriety, and I just think you should get a hobby. Like, I think you're pathetic. Then they told me how great their lives were. Like, one dude's like, I've been in prison for 10 years, I'm just grateful to be out, you know, I'm sober. And the other lady's like, I've been in this same asylum. And it's like, okay, great. But they all seemed happy, and I went to this, these morning meetings at Bridge, and all these dudes were just sitting around laughing, and they seemed to be able to do strange things, like put full sentences together, and I was really impressed by that. Like, it was just basic stuff, and I just tried to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and put one foot in front of the other. People told me to take service commitments. If they asked for a service commitment that needed to be done, I'd get it, and started working through the steps. And I told myself in that first year, the only thing that I was going to do was just try and stay sober. And if everything goes wrong in my life, if I screw this thing up royally, if I just, you know, create even more dysfunction in my life, if more people hate me than already do, if everything goes wrong, but I stay sober, that's all I'm going to care about. And so, if things go right in my life, great, but if they don't, they don't. And at 8 months of sobriety, that job that I somehow managed to hold on to throughout my drinking, that my boss, you see, her son died in a drunk driving accident. So she was very lenient on me. She gave me chance after chance, which is part of the reason I was able to keep that job. And so, she finally, after 8 months of sobriety, you know, with tears in her eyes, just said, like, you know, first of all, are you going to your classes? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to my classes. Good, good. But, you know, I just hate to do this, I gotta fire you. And then they didn't accept me for unemployment. And so I'm living at my parents' house on no unemployment, I have no money, I'm selling off my possessions on like eBay and the internet to just pay the basic bills that I have. And I just got really depressed. And I got a year, and then by 14 months, I was just like in the darkest pit of my life. I struggled with depression my entire life. You know, like I said, getting out of bed, it was a tough thing, but this was just so much worse. Here I am, I'm 14 months sober, I don't have a job, I'm living with my parents' house, I'm 31 years old, and I just don't, oh, it sucks. And so I was caught in this place between, should I just end it and just be remarked as a guy who screwed up his life? And anytime someone thinks of me, they'll think about what not to do. And that's how I'll be remembered. Or do I do what? I don't have anything going for me. I mean, I applied for 60, more than 60 jobs in a single day. And I wasn't getting a call back from anyone. I couldn't get a job. And so what do I do? And I thought about this guy. I was reminded of this guy when I was back in the rehab when I was 25, who was just crying in a meeting. And I just remembered his honesty, because he's like, I woke up this morning and decided I was going to kill myself this morning. And a friend brought me to a meeting, and so here I am, and he's just crying. And so I decided to call that guy, and I'm sitting there, and I'm telling him all my problems, I'm telling him about my life is, and how much it sucks, and he stops me mid-sentence, and he just goes, you know what, Justin, I think you just need to get over yourself. And those words just literally felt like someone came into the room and punched me right in the gut. I keeled over, felt like I couldn't breathe. And then he followed up with this. He said, the purpose of your life is to magnify the glory of God. And at the time, I didn't even know what that meant. But when I got off that phone call, I said, okay, I have no one. No one's calling me. I feel like I have no friends. I have nothing going for me. I'm living at my parents' house. I'm selling off the crap that I do have just to have a couple bucks. But do I believe in God? And the answer was emphatically yes. And so that was once again a turning point where I just had to say I have nothing, but I have God, and I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other. And some days the success story was that I got out of bed. Some days I got out of bed and brushed my teeth, and that was pretty impressive for me. Some days I got out of bed and I took a shower. And then eventually, after putting one foot in front of the other long enough, some days I got out of bed, took a shower, and brushed my teeth all on the same day. And that was where I started. And so there's a friend of the firm, he has a farm, and he invited me to go build a fence out there. And I just remember how freeing that felt, just being out there working with my hands. And so I thought, wait, I can do this. Why am I in charge of people to do stuff with my hands, build stuff and whatnot? And I just started, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue. No clue anything about the construction industry. And I did like to build things, but I didn't know what I was doing. I Googled everything. I studied everything. If I got a job, I would buy whatever the tool was before, and I'd practice before I went into that job. Went on YouTube. I mean, just started learning things, and here I am. My life is just better than I ever thought it would be, and it's also completely different than I ever thought it would be. I got married in October. I have my own business. We bought a house together, I have happiness today, right? True happiness, just being alive. I'm able to wake up sober. But the thing about it is I'm doing things that are instructed to me, and it hasn't all come at once. One thing I know, and it's one thing I've heard in here, so it's nothing original, but a spiritual experience is not normally this white light experience where God just reveals himself to you and whatever that burden is magically taken away. For me, what I discovered is that a spiritual experience is when I recognize a character defect, then I get down on my knees every day, sometimes multiple times a day, and I say, God, I want this thing removed from me. And then I go through this really uncomfortable phase in my life where I don't like it. Because I'm used to that thing, and the only way for me to get from point A to point B, which is where I want to go, is to be uncomfortable for a while. And it feels right, once again, somewhat like it did when I first got sober, which is I'm just crawling to my skin, because I don't know how to live in my own skin. I don't know how to be me. I have no clue who I am. I walked into these rooms when I was a child. I had no clue how to be a man, and I saw people around me being a man, and I wanted to be one. I had no clue how to do that. And so I meditated. And so today, I can recognize things in myself, and then the choice is mine, whether or not I choose to change that thing. But if I choose to change that thing, I know what's coming next. I'm going to be uncomfortable. I'm going to have to put in some work. But it starts every day with just getting down on my knees. I pray. I do some readings. And I just try and spiritually prepare for the day ahead. And some days are better than others, but what I know is that I'm just recognizing every day that I'm an alcoholic. Because those are the greatest words that I've ever said in my entire life, that I'm Justin, I'm an alcoholic. And they always will be, because they were the turning point of everything. And so, working the steps, yeah, it's absolutely necessary. It's absolutely necessary to work those steps and to get vulnerable, but the thing is that whatever it is that you're wanting, there's a lot of things that I wanted when I first came in here, and they didn't materialize. But now, looking back on it 5 years later, I can recognize that they didn't materialize because that's actually not what I needed. It's what I thought I needed. It's what I convinced myself I wanted, but I didn't need it. And although I may have wanted it, it wasn't actually necessary. God had something different, something better planned, because along the way, whatever it is that he had planned also came with me changing in some way, from the inside out. So my character has been developed as I developed through this program. And although it's not what I wanted, I also can recognize how what I wanted, if I would have gotten it, would have taken me from realizing and changing something about myself that I actually didn't need to possess in the first place. The only reason I possessed it is because I was an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, because I constantly was trying to outdo everyone, but the inside, I just felt like I was a piece of shit. There's only one way to change that. It's not for me. It's by trusting that God had something better for me. And because of the experiences that I've gone through since I've gotten sober, what I know is that no matter what, whether I'm in a prison, whether I have absolutely nothing and go bankrupt, or whether I'm on top of the hill and I am just, you know, so high I just can't believe how high I am, it doesn't matter, because it's an inside job. It doesn't matter where I land. What matters is that I recognize why I landed there and then put my trust in that higher power. And so that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at today. And my life's good. You know, there's still a lot that I have to work on, but I don't shy away from it, and I also don't put pressure on myself anymore. You know, my sponsor said, you know, there's no room in your life for guilt. And that is so true. There's absolutely no room in my life to feel guilty. It has no place in my life, and it doesn't do me any good. What does do me good is to, yeah, feel guilty maybe about the decisions that I've made, but then recognize that and find a solution. So this thing goes so far beyond drinking, but like I said, the greatest words that I've ever said and the greatest words I will ever say, the best decision I ever made was just to stay sober one day at a time. So I'm just an alcoholic. Thank you.
There's a few minutes to spare.
Alright, thank you.
We are now going to start the discussion part of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible. So we ask you just keep in mind the time limit that we have. We'll wrap up here at about 5 to 9. So that gives us about 40 minutes now. And I'm going to go ahead and turn the meeting back over to Justin to pick on some people to share. And you can choose people online as well as people here in person.
Okay. Mike, can you hear me? You just celebrated your birthday, didn't you?
Mike, have you got your microphone tonight? I know sometimes he doesn't have his microphone connected. I'll chat with him. All right. Let's come back to him.
David?
David Alcoholic.
David.
Thank you for being here, Justin.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a great start. And I do remember that Christmas Day, it was this meeting, Sunday night, Sunday night, Sunday night after all on Christmas Day, and most Christmas days, people, family, people, whatever you do. our secretary was Louie, and he had already had plans to be out of town. So I was 6 months sober. Okay, I'll be there. And so, yes, I was there at the second meeting. Yeah, you were, you walked in and, but, you know, following up after that, it was obvious that you wanted the rehab. And, it was just a joy to see you grab onto this program and run with it. Yeah, and maybe that was me on my paint cloud saying, wow, this is great, because my life has changed for better. And similar to you, my sponsor has told me, every service opportunity that comes up, I want you to take it. Now that does actually lead me to a nice step of advance I need to make to you. I was the chip chat for the Friday night group. You had celebrated your birthday, and our birthday meeting wasn't for another week. And I was the dictator, and it's like, no, the rules are you don't get your shit till next week.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really pissy, awful thing to do, because your uncle had come down from Fresno. And so I'm sorry, and I learned I will never do that again to anyone. So then part of any other nice stuff for me is, did I leave anything out? Did I owe you anything else?
No.
Well, I only do that because it was just wrong. Right? And there's no way I could do it. But thank you for your share. Everything about your share is exactly. I have family members who are probably out to be in this room, if they were to hear what you just said, I'm sure it would be wonderful for them. So, thank you. David, I'm calling.
Thanks, David. Thanks, David.
No, it's funny about that, I don't even remember that.
Erica,
yeah,
Erica. Mm-hmm. Hey. My name's Erica, I'm not
Paul. Hey, Erica.
Thank you for your shift. I am just worn out, I'm just tired, and I feel like I don't have a lot of inspiring things. Right before I came, my two-year-old was carrying my little Jimmy. I was like, oh my god. Don't carry him. I mean, like, we can't pick up the baby. We literally were carrying him, and it just made me feel like I didn't want to come. It kind of just made me want to get home to survive. And then my husband. I'm freaking out now. No air. You know, my anxiety is like crazy. But I want to be just participating in my recovery in the hospital for years this summer. And it's hard, as a stay-at-home mom, I feel like I'm always on the clock all the time. It's hard to make time for myself. I don't want to sound like cliche, but that's the truth. It's just what it is. I'm in between sponsors. I'm feeling a little my emotional sobriety is a little crazy right now, so.
Matt, you online?
Hi, everybody. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Right on. Thank you. Hey, Justin. Man, that was compelling. That was a great, great lead. You said many, many things that I relate to. Hopelessness during the addiction, being caught in the wave of addiction, and just treading water and trying to gather and amass as much resources as we could to keep that sickness. Oh, man, I related. And in my vernacular, it's I didn't want the last 10,000 drinks I had to have. And I give it a large number because it was a long time trying to get out of that, trying to figure out how I got there and what do I do to get out of it. And it wasn't until it became clear that, Matt, you're an alcoholic, and you can't control that, and you can't enjoy that. That's out of your grasp. It's out of your sphere of influence, if you will. It's not available to you. And until that simple thing became clear to me, for years and years I'd gone to meetings and gone out, and I'd go to the Alano at night thinking that I could get the answer. Somebody would slip me the answer. Here's what you're doing wrong. And I get disillusioned and self-willed again, and I go back out again. I come back to the Alano for day meetings, and I meet people there hoping that somebody would give me another piece of the puzzle, or somebody would say something I could relate to, and it would just really sink in, and I'd take that information home and think about it and try to figure out what was going on. And nothing was going on. Matt was a drunk. It's as simple as that. There was no big issue to be resolved in my life apart from Matt loves to do what Matt loves to do. Matt loves to be Matt. Matt is so self-willed. He will walk and talk and act as he sees fit. And until he turns it over to a power greater than himself, there's little hope for him. And when it became clear that I had no choice, I not only could I not stop drinking, I could not drink. I was so sick. I was caught in the wave. And so I had to turn myself in. And that was a while ago, but again, just I'll pull up there. Thank you, Justin, for your lead, for being on the spot and in service so quickly. And that was a great share, man. And you mentioned God, and I listened linearly for certain things. I'm really edified to hear terminology like that. So thank you again. Thank you, everybody. I'm glad to see you tonight. Matt Alcoholic.
Thanks, Matt.
Christian? Christian, I'm an alcoholic.
Christian.
Yeah, that's a good share, man. I remember the days when I went to pick the cigarette butts off the street. I used to, my wife, but we were boyfriend and girlfriend, we used to live right by, taking right draw Hankers and Valeri. We used to pick through the ashtrays. Because all these, you see people on their smoke breaks, and you see they put out like more than half a cigarette and dump it in the ashtray. And they pick up the ashtray and start hanging them, like, pick up a whole cigarette. I'm like, yeah, that's all right. Freaking not even 18 yet. Like, got cigarettes in my pocket, and I'm pulling out these butts and everything. Like, freaking cheeks and the cheek of Sean Williams pulling out that freaking jacked up joint, we're all jacked up cigarettes. So it's the same thing, man. Feeling like what you said, feeling like that deep depression. I was starting to get there. I'm about to hit it in 2 days. I hit my three month mark, which is the longest I've ever been sober. And it feels great. But I got about a week ago, I was starting to get into a deep depressive rut because my wife's working, kids are at home, like, all we have is my wife's paycheck. No bills, her paychecks are enough to cover our bills right now. But I believe that, you know, men are the reason. But I also still believe that if a man's job to be in charge of the family, take care of the family, supply for the family, you know, she supplied, it's freaking awesome. I love it. I love her for it, respect everything she does. But at the same time, I should be doing that shit. I should be doing that. And I started thinking more and more, I was like, crap, we got like very little in the bank. You know, we got this, we still got this, we still got that. And, you know, I was going like one or two meetings a day, doing really good, staying in my program or anything. Calling my sponsor whenever I freaking remember to. I apologize for that. I'm very forgetful when it comes to calling people. Like, I'm very bad with the phone. I mean, yeah, I'll go on freaking videos and do whatever real easily, but calling people, messaging people, I'm very bad at doing that. So,
I was starting to get a depressive rut, man. I was like starting to count on myself, and I was like, dude,
I need to drink.
I said, a what? I'm a bigger one. No, jackass. Like, you drink right now, you're feeling even worse. You know, you're going to be down on yourself. You're kicking yourself in the ass. You know, all that shit you said about, I wanted to start over. Now you don't want to start over. And you're going to start over, you're depressed. But like, no, you're going to make yourself feel worse. And then, like, went to storage later that day, and next thing you know, I get a phone call. I had an interview the day before, and they're like, we don't call you tonight. You know, we go with someone else. We're just fine, man. I understand. You know, there's other jobs out there. So everyone was asking me, you know, hey, they call you. I'm like, no, I didn't hear nothing. So I guess I didn't get it. But I called my sponsor, Mr. Dave, over here, and I was like, he's me and him are talking, and he's like, you hear anything yet? I go, and I was like, no, nothing yet. I go, well, if I don't get this job, you know, there's other jobs out there. It's at a Four Seasons. And I was like, well, if I don't get, you know, maybe God has to be planned for me, you know, because you don't work in somewhere where there's alcohol. And then Dave's like, dude, that's not it. He's all, you can drink anytime you want. You can go anywhere and you can get a drink. He's all, just because there's alcohol there, don't mean double jack. He's all, if you want, you go down and get a beer right now. What the hell's stopping you? He's all, just because that job has it, I don't mean nothing. He's all like, just look at it like this. You got it. You got the job. I was like, I know. Maybe I did it. He's like, no, not maybe. You got it. And I was like, I got it. I got the job. And I went down to storage, got some stuff out of my storage. My daughter, she has hair, just heat treatment stuff for straightening hair, and went down there, couldn't find it, so let's storm by. Came back to the house, throw some burritos in the microwave for lunch, and so, you know, my phone goes off. And I'm like, hey, this Christian's Mike from Four Seasons. I'm like, oh, suck, dude. He's like, yeah, I just want to know if you want to work for us. And I was like, oh, yeah, I want to work for you, man. Let's do this. He's like, all right, man. Come in this Monday at 11. I'm like, sure, we'll do that. Hung up the phone, and I freaking looked at my wife. She looked at me, and I put, at the top of my lungs in my house, and freaking stepped outside, called Dave, like, hey, guess what? I got the job! And just that depression just washed away. So just, oh, I got a freaking job. I love it. I'm awesome. Okay, now I love this job, dude. It's awesome. Like, all I'm doing is I'm standing behind the counter, and I'm ringing people up, like, I'm on my feet for 4 to 8 hours straight. Like, I get to sit down for 10 minutes in my car, smoke a cigarette. Every 2 hours, it takes 10 minutes. But I'm on my feet all day. So when I get home, my feet are hurting. My legs are hurting. But in the back of my mind, I prefer this hurting than this hurting and this hurting. Because, you know, I don't have dirty hands, but hurting, you know, they say dirty hands, clean money. Hurting feet, clean money, you know? Like, I feel good, clean soul, clean everything, and I'm loving it. But 2 nights ago, I had the biggest test trigger by far in the time that I've been doing this. One of the coworkers that I have, gave us a puppy. My daughter's been asking for a puppy for a few years, and I finally broke down and got him a puppy. He was adorable as hell. Now I say was. No, this isn't. Friday night, I get off work. I go to the Pine Cadillac like me. Sitting there, and I see everybody sharing, and all of a sudden my daughter calls me up. My wife gets on a video chat. My wife gets on the phone. She's flipping out. We don't have dogs no more. And I'm like, oh, crap, they got out. And I go home, chase these dogs down. It's going to be hell. One dog about this big, the other dog like this freaking big. So I'm like, this is going to be a battle all night finding these dogs. No. The oldest dog killed the puppy. Yeah. So she tells me that the oldest dog killed the puppy. And I, right there, jumped in my car, rushed home. I get home, my daughters are crying, bawling their eyes out. I go in the garage, pull blood in the garage. My wife took him in there, and there's just this thing of blood there. Now I gotta clean this up. My daughters are just unconsolable, and it's just hitting me hard. And I looked at my wife, I was like, this makes me want to drink. I looked right now, and I go, I want to drink. And I was like, I need to call someone right now. He goes, go make a call. So, I called Dave, but it was my bottom front, almost midnight, close to midnight, getting close. And I figured he was, in bed. So, I called Jared, and I looked at the front, and this is Jared. Okay, so, and, they were still in the meeting. I was like, oh, crap, they're still in the meeting. So then I called another buddy, called Leah. But Leah and them, they were on a trip, they were busy. So I figured, that's right, they gotta go somewhere. So I called another buddy, and he answers his phone. Start talking to him for a minute, pulled him on the phone with him, and then Jared called me back, so I started talking to him. I'm gonna say this right now. When I was in Pine, if it wasn't for this guy right here, I wouldn't have made it. This dude right here helped me out so much at Pine. With talking about God, talking about my kids, talking about everything. Like, I owe a lot to Jared. And I'm getting it. This dude is one of my best friends now. And if it wasn't for him, and I also wasn't for Dave, a lot of shit would have went down fine for me. It's like, that's in going home. And I'd probably be back to drinking. If it wasn't for these two dudes and my boy Danny over here also, these are the three main guys right here in the beginning of my pine that kept me going. And if it wasn't for this guy calling me back that night, I don't know what the hell I would have done. Because I wanted to drink. Because I just felt so frazzled. So cattywampus, so whatever you want to call it. I just, it felt bad. I just wanted to drink. So I was just so overwhelmed with everything at that time. But he told me if you drink, it's going to make sure it was not going to be good for your kids, not going to be good for your family. And I'm like, dude, you know, this whole time at Pine, they're like, God makes these things happen for a reason. These things happen for a reason. And I was like, why the fuck did God have to kill my husband? Like, why did this have to happen? And he was like, dude, God didn't have, like, a death threat out for your dog. He's all, this shit happened. It's a testament. He's all, these things happen. And I was all, I don't know what this is. So to me, I just took it as, is this, do the test? It's just how I've got to look at it. You know, people take things, but they take them. And to me, I just took it as a shitty test. And that's just the best way I could look at it. And it was the hardest, to this date right now, it was the hardest test that I had to pass for not wanting to drink. And I think to all these stories I hear of people losing family members and not drinking, and I'm like, dude, if these people cannot drink and go back to using over losing a daughter, a father, a grandpa, this and that, I'm not going to go back to drinking because of a puppy. Like, it sucks, and my daughter's been asking for it, I got it for him, this happened. I got this. You know, because of this room, all people, all like you, they keep me going. And I just want to say, just to buy you a Raiders shirt the second I get a check, man, because I'm tired of hugging a Niners shirt with me.
Your spirit is so powerful and you ruined it.
But yeah, so I wanted to just say real quick, thank all of you for always being there and just, you know, thanks for always helping.
I think it only appropriate, thank you, Christian. I think it only appropriate now that we hear from 49ers that way.
When he calls the county system and talks to me, you know, I didn't get it from him. He's got it too. And he was sitting there talking to me, you know, and calm me down. You know, and all, if anything I'm going through, he knows what he wants it. You know, I believe myself. But I didn't care about myself. I didn't care about if I was sober or not, if I was hurting. But, now I have a lot to fight for, you know? I'm a kid in the room, and I'm a grandpa, okay? And I just, I told my baby mother, baby granddaughter, a couple of weeks back, and one of my son, he didn't want me in your life, because, you know, I was using, and I'm sober. It's an amazing feeling, you know? I get told my granddaughter, and my son told me that he's proud of me. That's something like that motivates me too. Because my son was never in in prison, locked up, and I wasn't there mostly for my son's birthday, graduation, baseball games, football games, basketball games, whatever, you know? I missed all that. Now, see the steps that I'm taking in my recovery, and hopefully he's proud of me. You know? And that really motivated me more. While my friend, stay my friend, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing. So, yeah, it's all right. So, you got to do it. I'm grateful
for that. Online, Catherine S., are you there?
Hi, I'm Catherine, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Catherine.
Good to be here. It's the first meeting I've been to in a long time online or even in person, so it's really good to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. I loved your story, your share. I watched you when you came in. I think I was there, the meeting, you were there a week after your first week of sobriety. And it's a miracle to watch people grow in this program. You know, I didn't get to hear your whole story when you first came in, and I can really relate to the cigarettes that you talked about. I can remember when my father, he was alive, and I was like, I don't know, second, third grade, and he smoked cool cigarettes, and I thought it would be cool to steal his cigarettes and go hang out with the kids in the woods and smoke cigarettes. And I, too, was like you. That's kind of where my mindset was, and it started pretty young for me on wanting to do things outside of the box. And for me, the menthol cool cigarettes also gave me a little buzz that I also enjoyed a lot. Kind of took me out of myself. You know, it allowed me to be somebody that I think in my mind didn't even want to be. I wanted to be somebody different already. And so for me, it made a lot of sense that by the age of 11, I had already started to have my first drink. And that's where I found the solution to life that the alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself, which was give me that ease and comfort in life and allow me to be somebody that I could be okay with. And, you know, and it worked for me for quite a long time, for many years, until I was like 29 years old. And by the time I was 29, it no longer worked for me. And by that time, you know, I had crossed all the lines and all the barriers I said I would never, ever cross. And every barrier that I crossed over, that way of life became acceptable to me. And by the time I was 29, I was in an insane asylum because that's where the alcohol took me. And I still came out of there not knowing that I was an alcoholic. I was in full flight from reality. And I couldn't even see that I had a problem. But, you know, I love that there's a God in my life, even at that time, I just didn't recognize it, that led me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came in to prove to everybody that I was not an alcoholic because I was sure that somebody in the rooms of AA was going to take one look at me and go, you're not an alcoholic, and send me home. But I'm really grateful that didn't happen. You guys do like you just continue to do all the time, which is welcome us, give us hugs, and say, you know, keep coming back. We take you with all your wreckage and for exactly who you are. And I was so grateful for that at the time. You used the word, Jared, you said when you got into your uncle's van, I picked up on this place that took me back from when I first got sober, and that was you said you felt safe. And I can remember that same feeling when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and figured out that this is where I belonged, that I was with my people. I felt safe. And it was the first time in my life that I felt safe. And, you know, it's really great that no matter how long I've been around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, every time I come to a meeting, I feel safe. And I feel like I belong and I'm a part of. And I'm just really grateful for the rooms. I'm grateful for the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that led me back to a God that I didn't understand, but reintroduced me to a God that could help me to get some manageability in my life. And more importantly, gave me the ability to not pick up one day at a time. And I'm so grateful for this program, and I'm grateful for people like you that are still coming in the rooms and showing me and reminding me that no matter what, we don't have to drink, and no matter what is going on in my life today, I have a way out. I have a different solution today. I have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a fellowship of like-minded people, and I have a God of my understanding today that I can turn to. So thank you for calling on me tonight. I'm grateful to be here. And again, thank you for your share.
Thanks, Catherine.
Dave?
Sir. Dave, alcoholic. Thank you for your share. You've lost me on your way in so many ways. What jumped out at me is the uncomfortability. You know, I've learned for myself personally, you know, being uncomfortable is comfortable. Because me being comfortable within myself is, you know, a bottle in one hand and that other substance in the other. You know, that's my comfortability, you know, being comfortable for myself. So I've learned that being uncomfortable and doing things out of my norm is quite comfortable today, because it's down the path of where I want to be and need to be and strive to be, you know, sober, clean father and brother, you know, and friend. So for me, being uncomfortable has got to, I've learned that it's got to be quite comfortable, per se. I don't know if that exists, you know, probably does, you guys. Yeah, I definitely had to learn that. I've been through fine a few times, you know, and I realized, you know, the first few times I did go through there, that I was just totally in Dave's will. I never got out of Dave's will, so I did everything to make myself more comfortable, and I just kept on going back out, and I finally realized, you know, I'm not changing nothing, you know, and so many sayings and stuff that I could never stand to hear, but now, I guess, finally at that point, I hope, and God willing, that those sayings, they all make sense to me now. You know, I keep coming back. I just couldn't stand that. You know, I really couldn't. And it's like, I remember my first meeting I went to, from my first time going through Pine at the Alano, and they said, keep coming back at the end of the meeting. And I'm like, oh, you know, I can't just get this, get it right, you know, and then I won't have to keep on coming back. And then I realized really shortly after that, you know, you got to keep on coming back. You know, it's a lifelong process. This is something that you can't just for a few meetings, you know, work 12 steps, and then you're going to be cured and just go on with life and be successful and happy and free without doing it all the time, you know. And I think that a big part of me wasn't too excited about that. It's like, you know, I want to live life and be like one of those normal, you know, people out there that don't have drinking problems. I thought that's what this was all about when I first started this program, you know, back in 2016. But that I'm going to be a sponsor, I'm going to go to meetings for 6 months or whatever, and work the steps, and then I'm going to be like one of the normal people, and I ain't going to have to do none of this anymore. It's like, it doesn't work like that, you know? But today, you know, shoot, almost 6 years later, I enjoy the heck out of AA and the program, and working with my sponsor, the Fellowship and the Unity. You know, I have a sponsor, but I also got a brother that I talk to, you know, Son Daily, that I look at as like life coach or some big brothers, or just, you know, it's brothers in AA that I constantly ask questions and insight on things that are going on in my life. Like, you know, I'm going through some health issues right now and stuff, you know, and I almost thought I was a sociopath even there, I guess, per se, really. Like, I believe in God, you know, God to my understanding. And to my understanding, I thought it was, if I believed in God and trusted Him to protect me from life, then I shouldn't have no kind of worries or stress. I know I'm possibly going up against heart surgery tomorrow. And I'm stressed out, you know, I'm worried. I'm scared. I ain't gonna lie. You know, and I was talking to this gentleman a couple nights ago, and I explained to him. And he's like, well, you should be. And I'm like, should I be? And he's like, well, yeah. And I'm like, well, I don't know, should I? And he's like, well, are you a sociopath? And I don't think so. I mean, I'm worried, I'm scared. And he explained to me the whole scenario about it. If I wasn't, then I would be a sociopath. You know, and I'd probably be sitting here where I'm at and doing what I'm doing and have a sponsor and trying to stay clean and sober. You know,
Thanks, Justin. I'm an alcoholic, thanks, Bill Hatford. And that was not nearly enough enthusiasm, fellas. Hey, I'm really glad to be here tonight, and you know, something occurred to me. A couple of things occurred to me that I think are important to point out. So Dave and Ricky and Christian and Jared and Danny and Anthony, you guys I see together frequently. You fall into what I would maybe term into a category of road dogs. You know, people that are right. You guys travel together. You're all in relatively similar space, you know, being kind of new to this different way of living. And it's been my experience that it's been very important to stay close to people like that. So it really delights me to see all of you guys together. And I've also noticed you guys jumping in and being part of, you know, some of our events and helping out. And I'll tell you that I think that's a really good thing for your recovery, and it's a really good thing for our fellowship. So I'm really glad to see you guys, and I'm glad to see you together, and I hope that'll continue. You know, this could be kind of an awkward thing to talk about, but I think it's important, so I'm going to say it. I had the opportunity when Justin walked into be his sponsor first, right out the gate, right? And, you know, listening to his story today kind of reminds me about something about myself that sometimes, and I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but sometimes I am, like, blissfully unaware of shit going on around me, right? Or sometimes I'm so wrapped in what's going on with me and what I think about me and what I think about other people that I'm like completely unaware of what's going on with you. And the other thing is that I know, I seem to not remember a lot of things. I mean, even during my sobriety, there's a lot of things, like somebody will come up to me, I've got a sister that's really good at remembering stuff. She'll say, you remember when we did this? And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I was there, man. And she'll have like pictures and stuff. Right, there I am, you know, and there's even stuff today, and you know, I'll tell you, the only way I can describe it is I feel like I was completely unaware. Justin was talking about going through a difficult period in his life when everything seemed to be stacked up against him, and I'm not sure, but I think that was about the time when we were kind of doing some work together. I think it was. And I was at least as of right now, I can't remember what I was aware of then, but I'm unaware of that now. And Justin did something that I think is a great model for everyone to pay attention to. Justin felt like he needed to do something different to save his own life. And he went and found a new sponsor, and that's worked out really well for you. I mean, you know, Justin talked about it, but I got to watch this, man. I got to watch a guy that was really kind of rudderless, right? And And I can say that because, you know what, so was I. I really didn't have a lot of direction. I didn't know what was going on. I had things going on, right? But I was mixed up. And I've had sponsors, I've had friends, I've had people in church, I've had mental health professionals, I've had my primary care physician. I've had a lot of people help me to find some direction. You know, I haven't done it on my own, that's for damn sure. And to be able to watch Justin get into I remember when he was struggling at work. He had a job, but he didn't really like it. He was kind of struggling and like, what do I do? And I don't know if you guys ever felt like that. Like, if you got a job, you know, you're like afraid to leave it because, like, at least it's something. And you're jumping into the unknown, right? And Justin really showed a lot of bravery and jumped into, like, starting his own business. And, you know, I've been really lucky because one of the things that he does with his hands is something that I can't and I don't want to do for myself. And so I've had a great opportunity to hire this cat from time to time. And he's done some great work for me. And to know that he's been able to turn that into, a business of his own that is successful is really an important thing, I think, to pay attention to. And I got to watch him get married, and it was a magical evening. And you guys went to, I think, Paris, right? For your honeymoon,
yeah.
For a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know, how many of y'all have done that, right? I mean, that's pretty cool. And you know, those are the kinds of things that are absolutely available to us. It's just a matter of trying to figure out, you know, what to do next. And I found there to be no short list of people and resources available in and around AA to help you. I was at a different kind of fellowship this morning. I participate in a thing, we call it a small group. Hey, guess what? This is a small group, right? It's a group of people that are all trying to move in a positive direction in their lives, right? That's about all the description I need to provide. And there were some people there that were talking about the power of reconciliation in our relationships. And you know what? It's a lot easier. I'll tell you, for me, it's a lot easier for me to hold on to a grudge. And it's a whole lot easier for me to think about all the ways that you might have done me wrong, and to man, you know what I don't see is the truth that when I hold okay, I'll just use a specific example. If I use something out of the past that I'm upset with my dad about, and I convict him. And I hold on to righteous anger at my dad. Do you know who gets locked in a cell with him? Me, this guy. And the crazy thing is, there's no logic, there's no mathematical equation that makes any freaking sense out of this. But if I can find a way to release my dad from the anger that I have, as righteous as it may be, I'm the asshole that gets free. And it's unbelievable. It doesn't make any sense. But I've experienced it firsthand over and over and over. And still, what I gotta tell you is there's something that I'm pissed off at my dad about right now. You know? And I know I gotta get past it. And I'm holding on to it, you know? I'm holding on to it. But by being willing to admit the truth about that, and talking to my sponsor about it. My sponsor told me what I could do is get out a piece of paper and start writing, right? How am I powerless over my dad? That's a good place to start. And I have hope. I have great hope that it's gonna change. And I hope I get to tell you about how it changes. But right now I'm struggling with it because, you know, like, my dad's got me in a position where I don't feel like there's any way for me to win, and I don't like it. You know, it's like I feel like I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't. And I don't like being in that position. And somebody today suggested a really annoying thing. You know, this lady had the nerve to suggest that maybe I could try having a calm, rational conversation with my dad on the topic. I was like, oh, that's never going to happen. There's hope here, man. I'm glad to see you guys. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks,
Bill.
Yeah, and actually, I guess that kind of wraps up the time. Sorry, I bogarted all the last couple minutes here.